So the theme of the retreat is the three trainings of virtue, meditation, and wisdom, sila, samadhi, and punya. And the second one is samadhi, can simplistically be translated as meditation, but I think it's much more, something much more deeper and more intimate than meditation. Each of these three trainings support each other. Each supports the other two. Some people, entryway into the Dharma is through meditation, and they discover the other two in the process. They discover virtue, ethics, and they discover wisdom. Some people's entry point is wisdom, and in trying to live that wisdom, they discover the other two. They discover meditation or the inner training and development, and they discover ethics. And some people begin with ethics and virtue, and if you do that, it doesn't take long before you become sensitive and aware of your own inner life, quality of your inner state, and start cultivating that. And so then samadhi becomes, world of samadhi becomes important. And then the world of wisdom can open up. It's a great entry point into wisdom is the world of ethics and virtue. So, but traditionally it's sila is the foundation for samadhi, and samadhi is the foundation for wisdom. And one of the ways of understanding samadhi is that it's subjective. It's our subjective experience of ourselves. And by subjective, I don't mean the thoughts we have about ourselves, the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves, but what it feels like to be inside our skin, to inhabit our body, what it feels like in the to live sensitive and alert and aware to the inner sense, subjective sense of what it's like to be alive. And some people will spend a lifetime not knowing that, because they live in their heads and their thoughts, live in their busyness, their ideas. But samadhi is the cultivation, not just feeling this inner subjective side, but cultivating and developing it so that the inner sense of being has stability as part of it, has a sense of well-being, and has this sense of being integral or complete, in the way John talked about this morning, becoming whole or complete. And these this aspect of stability and well-being and completeness could be seen as the preparation for wisdom. And the key wisdoms that our tradition puts a lot of emphasis on is the wisdom of impermanence, the insight into impermanence, the insight into suffering, and the insight into not-self. But if you're taught about impermanence, suffering, and not-self, right out of the traumas of your life, it just can add more salt to the wound. Grow up in a tremendously impermanent life, unstable grown-up life, and be told, you know, it's all impermanent, just get over it. I've actually had Buddhist practitioners come up to me at some points where someone was going through a really difficult time, and they said, "You're a teacher. You should go tell them, you know, everything's impermanent, so they can understand." I refused. That was just, you know, not the right time and place for that It's more like saying, you know, get over it. And that's like telling a little baby, you know, it's like a little baby, but imagine telling a little baby, you know, it's impermanent, get over it. You know, that's not what the kid needs. The kid needs stability and presence. And so, you know, samadhi is in part the practice of stability, of steadiness. And we, a big part of that is we, again, the subjective side of it is to do that with our body. One of the reasons why it's been very important for me to include my posture as part of my practice was because the posture has been an anchor for me, a very, very important anchor for stability, for concentration, for presence, for grounding. And since I was lucky because my early years of practice was Zen, where they had a very particular posture to sit in, I struggled to get the Zen posture right. It wasn't easy, but probably never got it right. But the emphasis on the posture always meant that I always was coming back to my subjective experience from the inside out. What was it like here? And it was this grounding in the body that provided stability. And in fact, so much so that when I get concentrated, I don't think of concentration as a mental exercise. That I'm up in the control tower, and I'm going to, you know, take that laser that's up there, zero in, and keep, you know, like with my mind's eye, just kind of keep right there. But for me, part of what concentration is a steady, ongoing presence in my body, connected to my body. And there's a kind of stability, there's kind of the wandering mind doesn't go very far when I'm connected here in this body. And then things begin settling down. And as things settle down, I settle down into my body, and the body becomes the home for my awareness and my attention. And it's almost as if I become aware through the body. It's not like I'm aware through my thinking or aware through my brain, but the sense of awareness, even mindfulness, is more a sense of bodyfulness. So this is why, as some of you know, I like the word composure as a translation for samadhi. Not only does it literally translate the roots of the word samadhi into the roots of the English word composure, to pose with, to take a stand with, compose means there's something you do that's all of you. You don't just zero in with the control tower. It's when you compose yourself, you do that with your whole body. So like they have composing yourself around the breath, the experience of breathing, as opposed to, you know, just kind of tracking it with the little mind. So to start cultivating some stability. It's also that stability, then also is mental stability. So hopefully the mind doesn't remain the monkey mind jumping all over this way and that. And chasing thoughts, chasing ideas, chasing, you know, all kinds of things. Probably when I was in my early years of practice, I was a much better practitioner of meditation then than I am now in my fantasy. You know, I know all these fantasies. I was going to do this meditation practice and that meditation practice, this practice, and I was going to be the great yogi, and I was going to sleep 2 hours a night and get up and do all this practice before anybody else got up. And I was going to, you know, my fantasy, I was great. But there was very little stability in my mind, jumping around, ideas, fantasies about, you know, the practices I was going to do. Never got around to practice sometimes. I would sit down to meditate, but I never got around to meditating. I was planning so much. So stability, steadiness of the mind. The mind gets quiet, not chasing its thoughts so much. So it's with the steadiness and stability that we cultivate the subjective sense of it. And subjective means, in part to me, it's in the present moment. You don't have a subjective sense or feeling or experience without being in the present moment to feel it. And so it's so important to come back in the present moment because of how much then we get supported by the stability. If we're not present for it, it doesn't do us any good. And so to feel, have a subjective sense of stability, then it becomes more useful to have the insight into impermanence. The stability allows us to see change and how things are changing all the time. So maybe it sounds like a little bit paradox, but there's what we experience, objective sense of what we do, and then there's what we see. And that distinction is one that, in the teachings of the Buddha, you see, in the sense that when the Buddha talked about cultivating samadhi, he used verbs and descriptions of what that was like that all had to do with inner subjective states. Inner subjective states, and the verbs are often words like touching. They're kind of physical words, and you touch your breathing as opposed to watch it. And the verbs the Buddha used for mindfulness or insight or awareness were verbs of seeing. So there's these two different aspects, and they work together. But first, the classic way is first you cultivate the stability, the subjective sense of being in touch, grounded here. And then that allows us to see more deeply, see the changing nature. So the second aspect of samadhi is a sense of well-being. And then, again, imagine remember the time in your life when you were suffering the most, just horrible, hopeless, nothing, and then, you go to hang out with the Buddhists and they say, oh yeah, suffering, life is suffering, get over it, it's just all suffering. Just accept it. And then you made me think, well, these Buddhists, they suffer like everybody else, but they just seem to be into it. I guess you learn to suffer better if you're a Buddhist. You learn to open up to it, be mindful of it, accept it. So, why practice then if that's what it's about? But the function of samadhi practice, concentration practice, inner practice, settling, connecting, subjective settling in, is also to slowly, it's not a quick thing, but slowly start cultivating and having a sense of subjective well-being, subjective sense of happiness or joy. Or I like the word well-being because it's sufficiently vague to cover all of it. And it's not so ambitious. In my vocabulary, joy and happiness is a little bit too ambitious. But well-being, contentment, some sense of contentment or a sense of, I love the word ease, to be at ease in your body, but have a sense of well-being when you go inside of your skin. What do you find there? Does it feel comforting, comfortable to be there in your skin, or is it uncomfortable? And so we're cultivating a sense of being comfortable in our own skin. And so that's, you can see from that the idea of ethics is important. You can't be comfortable in your own skin if you're not, don't live an ethical life. And then, so there's a variety of practices that help us develop this inner sense of well-being. Practice of loving kindness, the practice of generosity, the practice of service, are all ones. But also the practices of letting go of chasing desires and wanting, letting go of chasing and or being chased by our aversions and our hostilities, resentments, letting go of are strategies of resistance, giving up, letting go of our strategies of running around like a chicken without a head, being restless and, you know, trying to fix and do everything. And learning to let go of doubt of all kinds. The classic doorway in Buddhism towards samadhi is by learning to let go or not have these five hindrances operating, or not getting hooked by them, not believing them, not getting pulled into their orbit, not being pulled around by desire, not being pulled around by hostility and sloth and torpor and restlessness, regrets, and doubt. Because in that being pulled around by those things, you're not going to be very comfortable in your skin in a deep way. Even when, be caught by desire sometimes can be very pleasant. That's part of the reason some people get pulled into fantasies of desire on retreat. I've had people tell me that they came into an interview, I was kind of amazed they would admit this. I thought, this is great. This must be part of the inspiring benefits of being a good practitioner, is being honest. So they come and say, I worked hard all morning, so by the afternoon I thought I deserved to have been a few hours in fantasy. So that was nice. So the pleasure of fantasy, if that's what it is, is only skin deep, if even that. And so I don't think it really satisfies, or a deeper contentment, deeper intimacy and connectedness that allows us to settle even further and relax. So as the hindrances, these kind of scatter the mind, settle away, and part of the function of these deeper concentrated states is to unify, to collect together the desperate parts of ourselves, the parts that are scattered and going this way and that way. And that comes to the third aspect of samadhi, which is integration, or becoming integral, or becoming whole. A subjective sense of being whole. It's all too easy to live at war with ourselves, to have parts of ourselves we want to disown, push away, or ignore. Or it's all too easy to kind of latch on to some part of ourselves to be fixated on at the expense of other parts. And as soon as we divide ourselves one way or the other, we're not whole. And the task is to become whole. So that when we're inside our own skin, it feels whole, it feels complete, it feels like we're not divided in ourselves. And so, so part of that, what it takes, is recognizing first how we're divided, that we're not in touch, we're not here. And then noticing perhaps how having too many desires or too many aversions or too many fantasies, too many thoughts, keeps us scattered. And a description of being scattered, which I kind of like, I hope it's a little bit meaningful. Maybe you can imagine yourself this way sometimes, having been this way maybe, that you will, you come in here to meditate. So your intention is to meditate, be in the present moment. But it's just before supper. So your thoughts are about supper. But just before you came to sit, someone was walking in your walking lane that you'd use the whole retreat. Everyone knows that's your lane. And so, you're indignant, you're angry with that person, with the retreat staff, with the place. How could this injustice happen? And so your body is still, coursing through feelings of hostility and indignation. So your mind's thinking about supper, your body, your emotions are still indignant. and your intention is to be present. And but then you sit down also, your shoulders hurt. Because the way you've been living your life is you're always tensing up about things. And when you sit down to meditate, you finally feel the cost of always being tense. So your intention has one idea. Your thoughts has another idea. Your emotions has another idea. And your body has a whole other idea of what's going on. So they're all kind of operating in different channels or different levels or something, different ways. Part of this subjective aspect of samadhi is collecting ourselves together, unifying ourselves, so that we're whole and we're working together for the same purpose. We're all settled here together. So that our intention has to do with being here. Our thoughts, if we're having them, are about being here with this. Our emotions, what it feels like emotionally, is somehow connected also to being here. There's not like a backlog of stuff. And there's and our body feels somehow settled and relaxed here when samadhi is going strong. But this idea of bringing all these different aspects together is an interesting one, because sometimes maybe if your emotions are really strong, the task is not to reject your emotions, but to bring the other three into harmony with that. So if you have strong emotions, feel that in your body. Make it your intention to really be present for what that's like. And if you have thoughts, don't think about the emotion, but have your thoughts kind of help you, direct you, keep you present for it. If you have strong body sensations, maybe there's a way of collecting yourself around that. Not stoically, kind of just staring at it from the control tower, but how is it to kind of softly kind of come into it, so that your intention is not to fight it, but to be present for it. So if you're thinking in some ways, simple thoughts to keep you present, not thinking about dinner, and if and your emotions, maybe some way of settle your emotions so the emotions are more compassionate, caring, present for what the sensations are, rather than resisting it or angry or something. So to bring ourselves into harmony, to kind of come together, to collect ourselves, become whole. Sometimes there can be a tremendous war inside, the subjective sense, the good side and the bad side, the good person, the bad person, and people can jump back and forth. And perhaps the step to becoming whole is to recognize the war. And then kind of see if you can open up and hold them both together. Or have them shake hands. Or imagine that different sides of you are walking hand in hand. Or just kind of imagine your body is like this big, beautiful thing that can hold it all. Like it's the, you know, it's the great mediator. You don't have to choose sides. When you do mindfulness practice, you don't have to choose different sides of one side over the other. It's quite a remarkable thing not to have to choose sides. You can have all kinds of horrible thoughts and feelings when you do mindfulness practice. You don't have to choose sides with it. The idea is just to open to it and be present, be very honest, and see it and hold it. And in that process, there's a chance of starting to become whole. So when we have stability, we can have insight into impermanence. When we have well-being, we can have a more effective insight into suffering, that's supportive, that's liberating. And when we have this sense of integrity or wholeness or being integral, then it makes a lot more sense to have the insight into not-self. But, you know, if someone's, has a very poor psychological structure and they feel inadequate and feel like they don't really count and they're kind of miserable and they don't even know what they think and what they want. And then they come to Buddhism and we say, oh yeah, there's no self. No self, no problem. You know, they're just like, they're even more disoriented. who am I? And, you know, we've had problems a little bit in Buddhism. People who have very poor personality structure, thinking they've come home when they come to Buddhism. Wow, yes, that's it. No self. There's no problem. I'm not here, but that's what Buddhism says. But actually, you got to be here first. And so this is the subjective sense, building up a strong, good sense of subjective self. And then at some point, with the stability and the sense of well-being and wholeness and integrity and confidence and courage, then you can look not-self right in the eye, and it's liberating and freeing rather than discouraging or confusing. Traditionally, this idea of training in samadhi, all the trainings in Buddhism, were presented as being a gradual training. And of course, we would like to do it quickly, right? And there's something very mature, I believe, very wise about having the long-term view, that we're slowly, steadily developing ourselves, training ourselves, cultivating ourselves. I think that if you have a long-term view, it goes faster. Do you know the story about the person who came to the monastery? Very accomplished person who succeeded in school and jobs and very quickly came to the monastery and asked the abbess, if I come here and practice hard, how long will it take before I get enlightened? The abbess said, 10 years. 10 years? But you don't seem to understand. If I really apply myself, you know, the best I can, and just I'll put everything I have into it and really try hard, how long will it take? Oh, in that case, the abbess said, 20 years. So there's something, I think there's something, you know, just take your time. It actually goes faster. You know, the tortoise won the race. Take your time. Give yourself time so you can settle in. So I think John made allusion to this idea the first night or early on. I heard it most succinctly first said by a teacher named Heather Martin. And she said it this way, in this form of this is a classic kind of teaching, but it was said so nicely. The fastest way from A to B is to be completely at A. But I like to say it differently. That what our practice is about is a journey from A to A. we're here to be completely here. To be here and grounded and present for this experience, whatever it might be. To inhabit ourselves, get inside our skin, be present for our subjective experience of what it's like. Not the thoughts and ideas that we have, fantasies we have about it, concepts so much, but to kind of enter in. And so the breathings, focusing on the breath, breathing in and breathing out. To not do it from the control tower, but to be aware of how to notice how the body experiences breathing. From the inside of the body, what's the body's own experience? And compose yourself on that, settle on it, allow it to come, be touched by it. And just kind of hang, be composed and rest and allow it to kind of fill you, the experience of breathing in and breathing out. Allow, you know, almost as if as you're experiencing the breath, there's an openness or an allowance or a willingness to allow that experience of breathing to affect you. And this willingness to allow it to affect you. Sometimes when I sit down to meditate, it's almost like I'm listening or something or feeling to what are the reverberations of breathing. If I'm mindful of my breath, what are the reverberations through my body as I do that? Or, you know, or energetically, what is the energetic flow as I do that? Or emotionally, what are the emotional effect of just staying there with the breath? And so kind of being open, willing to let the breath affect me. So part of samadhi is, you know, this is kind of more like maybe traditional translation of concentration, is to have a continuity of being really present for the experience. So it's not just kind of momentary touching in, but slowly with time have a steady focus and gaze and just kind of keep it there and get more and more into the breathing or the loving kindness practice or whatever your this steps as you walk. And the subjective experience of giving ourselves over completely to something simple, to relax and give ourselves over to it, surrender to it fully as best we can, to allow that subjective experience to mature and grow. Can seem to the uninitiated as a pretty, like someone talked about boredom last night, pretty boring thing to do. I mean, what can be more boring than sitting here watching your breath? I have a particular kind of breath that I've experienced sometimes when I'm meditating that I have the very convenient label for, cardboard breath. So there it is, cardboard breath. And I've learned, you know, it's like the dullest, you know, it's like no flavor breath at all, you know, just. And I just learned that when I come to that stage of my practice, I've learned that my job is to become the expert cardboard breath breather. Not to make it a problem, but just hang in there. My job is to hang in there, just feel it and feel it. Doesn't feel good, it's not satisfying. Not to make it a problem, not to make it like it should be different. Just hang in there. Just stay with it. But part of the delight of getting concentrated is kind of like not what you're focusing on. It's not like the breath per se or the steps as you walk. But rather, it's kind of like getting into the zone with that. I don't know how many of you have done something, some sport, like maybe running. Many years ago, I did running for a while. And one of the first surprises to me when I started running was how much the first day I hated it. And then I didn't hate it so much the next day, but the first 500 yards, I hated it. And then the next day, it was the first 200 yards, I hated it. Third day or the 100 yards, and there was this resistance. My body didn't really want to go along. My mind had an idea. My body was heavy and tired, but what I found after keeping it up is that my breathing probably harmonized. I learned how to breathe properly in a way that worked for my running, and at some point, I would get into the zone with running, and it's almost like my body would run itself, and it didn't feel like it was so much work to run. My body didn't seem so heavy anymore. I was just in the zone, and it could run sometimes for a long time. Kind of being really present and kind of. So the same thing can happen in meditation. You kind of get into the zone. Just you're absorbed. You're there, fully there. And it isn't necessarily exactly the breath is so captivating, but it's being in the zone makes the breath captivating. So there's a wider kind of bubble, a wider kind of field of sensations, of feeling, of being present, the kind of feeling of being expansive. A concentrated mind is a mind that's soft, expansive, spacious, light, connected, a variety of different ways. You know, sometimes the body feels lighter, it feels tingly, sometimes warm, harmonized. There's different ways different people experience these things. And you can't exactly will yourself into the zone. But you can't just kind of fantasize your way there either. You have to show up and just keep showing up, keep showing up. Keep showing up and keep letting go of what takes you away, and just be here for this experience. Or remember this idea of trying to be complete. Just bring everything together. Gather yourself together here in this experience, here and now. Even if you're wandering off in thought a lot, thinking a lot in meditation, then perhaps, rather than fighting that and thinking you're supposed to be on the breath, maybe then what you do is you bring all of yourself around the experience of thinking. So let you make your intention to notice the fact you're thinking. And I like the expression, look your thinking right in the eye. So show it who's boss. I see you thinking. And you really look at the thinking mind as a process, not the content of your thought, but really see that you're thinking. And then the body. How does it feel in the body to be thinking so much? And you might feel buzzing or pressure or tension. And what's the emotion of all that thinking? And there might be various emotions that are connected to all the thinking you're doing. And by going through those things again, you're beginning to gather yourself together so that you notice the different parts of yourself, the physical, the emotional, the mental, the intentional parts, and you gather them around. And by the time you gather them together and are all focused and involved in being present for thinking, chances are you're not going to be involved in thinking much anymore. Because thinking is something that you do by fueling it. We tend to be involved with thinking by our interest, being hooked in by it. But if you bring a lot of attention and practice on it, it settles away. Occasionally people have this wonderful experience that I do this in my intro class. I'm in the fourth week, so they've been trying to meditate for 4 weeks. And generally people think they're supposed to let go of their thoughts and not think when they meditate. So then I'll tell them, okay, now tonight, stop focusing on your breath. Cut that out. And now, focus on your thinking. Just notice your thinking. Look at thinking right in the eye. Just see it, your thinking. And there's usually a few people in the room who kind of their eyes pop open, or metaphorically, and they say, I've been struggling with my thinking, but when I finally had permission to think and just look at it, it stopped. There's a way in which struggling with our thinking fuels the thinking. The more you're bothered by your thinking, the more you're actually feeding it. So, virtue is a support for wholeness, becoming whole. And wholeness is a support for insight. And virtue becoming virtuous, or having that being have ethical integrity, is something that you can always begin now. You don't have to be burdened by the fact that you weren't before. You can start and get the benefits of it by starting now. And then samadhi. It's also about now. How am I now? Can I connect now from the inside out to my experience? Can I get under my skin and really be present in a kind, loving way, open way? What's here? What's here? And then there's wisdom. And that's not now. That's for John tomorrow. So, cut it out. No wisdom until tomorrow. John signed up for that. So, So let's finish by gathering ourselves together. Come and sit again. Reconnect with yourself in a fuller way.